Okay, so I thought that since this year, the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, I would speak about Rosh Hashanah Shechalios B'Shabbos, and it's somewhat serendipitous, I suppose, because the Kollel is learning Hilchos Shabbos this year, so it relates certainly to the beginning of the year when it's on Shabbos, so that's a very special combination. It doesn't happen too often. There are only 3 days in which Rosh Hashanah can never fall out. That's what we call Lo Adu Barosh, the Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. But Shabbos, even though it's one of the four days that Rosh Hashanah can fall out, it doesn't happen that frequently. It's the least common of all of the four combinations this entire year. Every single day that various Yom Tovim has fallen out has been the least common day that the Yom Tov can fall out. The last time that it happened was in 2020, which was the year of COVID, but I don't think that there was so much of a focus upon it at that point in time because people were focused on other things, like whether they'd be able to go to shul altogether, but on the second day when they would blow the shofar, whether you can blow the shofar with a mask over the shofar, whether that's going to muffle the sound of the shofar, how to avoid spreading germs, which doctor to trust, which shul to trust, etc., etc. You had a lot of people learning to blow the shofar for their own families and homes for the first time. Had a lot of other different types of focus 3 years ago. A lot of life and death shailos that were consuming people's attention. So now I think there's more of an awareness, oh, b'chi davar hu, this is something which is a little unusual, that Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos. And what are the halachos and what are the hashkafic implications of Rosh Hashanah falling out on Shabbos? So the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chof Tes Amud Beis, tells us that we have a practice which is followed by all of our shuls and all of our communities, that we don't blow the shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So where did this come from? This is the main mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. You're supposed to blow the shofar. So why would we do away with the main mitzvah just because it falls down on Shabbos? But that's what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says we don't do away with it entirely, but effectively, Bizman is there, we do away with it entirely. Because Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechalios B'Shabbos, B'Mikdash Hayu Tokenu V'lo B'Medina. They will blow the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. They will not blow the shofar outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, that's a little bit of a question how to interpret Avolo B'Medina. Certainly, that's the way that Rashi interprets Avolo B'Medina. Lo B'Yerushalayim V'lo B'Gbulin, that the shofar was not blown outside of the Beis HaMikdash, even in Yerushalayim, and certainly not the other neighborhoods in Eretz Yisrael, and that's where everybody was living in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, presumably. We weren't living outside of Eretz Yisrael. There became a time where there was the galus of the Aseres HaShvatim, and certainly during the Beis HaMikdash, there were Jews who still lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. That wasn't the focus of the Mishnah, but certainly they wouldn't be blowing the shofar either if it was outside of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Now, the Rambam, when he codifies the halacha, so the Rambam was of the opinion that they established that you cannot blow the shofar outside of the Beis HaMikdash, what that really meant was you couldn't blow the shofar outside of Yerushalayim. But Yerushalayim is considered to be a hemshech of the Beis HaMikdash. If you take a look in the Rambam in source Yud on page 3, so he says that Bisman this is midway through the first sentence about Bisman HaMikdash Kayim, when the Beis HaMikdash was around. That's what we're focusing on. The Mishnah, remember, the beginning is focusing on when the Beis HaMikdash was still around. By a base in a goda b'Yerushalayim, how you hakol token b'Yerushalayim b'Shabbos, then not only in the base of Mikdash, but even in Yerushalayim, everybody would blow the shofar on Shabbos. Kozman she based in Yoshmin. Wherever you had a base in, that was considered to be an appropriate place to blow the shofar. And any place which was within the tchum of Yerushalayim, the entire vicinity of Yerushalayim. So where did this distinction come from? We have certainly by Yamim Ahem, and then we have Bizman HaZeh, and we'll get to Bizman HaZeh, but even the starting point of the Mishnah by Yamim Ahem, when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, that we drew this distinction that we already did not allow the blowing of the shofar on Shabbos, either outside of the Beis HaMikdash, according to the way the Rashi and most of the Rishonim learn, or outside of Yerushalayim, the way that the Rambam learns. So where did this distinction come from? So here we have, basically, a machlokis between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli entertains the possibility that it's based on a discrepancy between two different psukim that we're well aware of, because we make these changes in our Nusach HaTfilah, we make these changes in our Nusach HaKiddush on Rosh Hashanah, that we have one pasuk that says, Yom Truah Yiyeh Lachem, right? That is in Parshas Pinchas. And then we have another pasuk that says, Be'echad Lachot Vashvibiyah Chodesh Hashvi'i Be'echad Lachodesh, namely first day of Tishrei, Yiyeh Lachem Shabbason, Zichron Truah Mikra Kodesh. It's not a Yom Truah, but it's a remembrance of the Truah. And that's the pasuk in Parshas Emor. So the Bavli suggests, oh, so maybe this is where the distinction comes from, that when it says Yom Truah, it's going to be a day of the blowing of the shofar, that's referring to when it is in the Beis HaMikdash. And when it says that's referring to when it's not Shabbos, when it's a regular weekday. And when it says Zichron Teruah, that's where referring to Shabbos. Zichron Teruah means that on Shabbos you're not going to blow the shofar. So that's where we find the distinction, that in Medina, if it's not Shabbos, you're not going to blow the shofar, because then the pasuk of Zichron Teruah applies. And the Bavli has two really powerful knockout kashas on this distinction. Says, no, that doesn't really make sense, because if I have a Gzeiras HaKasuv according to the Torah, that I cannot blow the shofar on Shabbos, so then why would I be allowed to blow the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos? And number two, why in the world would there be a Gzeiras HaKasuv not to blow the shofar on Shabbos? It's not a malacha. It's not one of the Lamites malachas. It's a chachma. It requires some special wisdom. Maybe it is sort of a penumbra, midrabanan, of something that resembles a malacha. Maybe I'm worried about Shem Yisak and Klei Shir, but it's certainly not a malacha deraisa that I need to have a gzeiras HaKasuv to tell me not to do it. So therefore, the Gemara, the Bavli, on Chof Tes Amud Beis, says it's really what we call gzeira deraba. Gezeira de Rabba does not mean that Rabba, the Amora, woke up one morning and made a Gezeira. No, because Rabba didn't live in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabba's explaining what the practice was in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. He says there was a Gezeira. Rabba is telling us there was a Gezeira even when the Beis HaMikdash, which preceded him, was standing, that Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim. We're worried that somebody who doesn't know how to blow the shofar, yes?
Can I ask a klutz kashya that I never really, why is it that Pope Rabba became the Baal Membra of this thing if it was going on for hundreds of years before, right? We always say it's a Gzera de Rabba for Sukkah, for Megillah, for Shofar. Is it interesting that Rabba became the Baal Membra of this thing? Obviously, it preceded him.
He became the Baal Membra because nobody really understood what the basis was of the practice, and Rabba came along and he said, I'm telling you what the basis of the practice was. Or maybe there was a disagreement, and Rabba's the one who finally settled the score, and everybody said, Rabba really got it right, and we're all going to pay attention to Rabba's opinion on this because it makes a lot of sense. But it's a good question, but that seems to be the way that it went down. So Rabba gets the credit for this because Rabba's the one who really explained the din. Sometimes you're doing something for a long time, you don't really understand why, and Rabba spelled it out and he explained it. So Rabba explained, somebody who doesn't necessarily know how to blow the shofar properly might go to somebody who's a big bucky, who's a big expert, in order to learn how to blow the shofar properly. That big expert lives in the house, which is a few blocks away. In the meantime, there's a Rishus HaRabim between where I live and where the other person lives. So I might pick up my shofar, even if it's lying on my lawn and it's already, let's say it's in the middle of the street, it's in the Rishus HaRabim, and really I should just pick it up and blow it. But instead, since I'm not sure how to blow it, so I'm going to carry a Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim, and that's going to be in Aveira de Araisa, and therefore, in order to avoid violating this Aveira de Araisa of Malacha on Shabbos, we abstain from blowing the shofar on Shabbos, and this is the same reason, explains Rabba, as Rabbi Brand pointed out, why we don't shake the lulav on the first day of Sukkot this year, when the first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, because we're worried that you're going to take your lulav to somebody who's a bigger expert in terms of how to shake the lulav, to explain to you how to shake the lulav. You're going to carry the lulav to shul, and you might carry the lulav Dalet Amos Bereshus HaRabim. When the Beis HaMikdash stood, there was a chiyuv de araisa on the first day, not only in the Beis HaMikdash, but there was a chiyuv de araisa, as there still is, even outside of the Beis HaMikdash, Then we would allow for the shaking of the lulav on Shabbos, but even when it would fall on the first day, as opposed to when it would fall on the other days. And that's because the first day of shaking the lulav was deraisa, both in the Beis HaMikdash and outside the Beis HaMikdash. However, since the after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we're not b'kiyim b'kviyah d'yalcha anymore. We're not so savvy about whether our first day of Sukkot is really the first day of Sukkot. Maybe the second day of Sukkot is really the first day of Sukkot. So therefore, we're afraid that we're in the first day of Sukkot. If we're going to shake our lulav, we're going to carry our lulav, that we're going to shake the lulav, then maybe we're not even able, we're not even fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraisa. So therefore, we say that we're not going to allow it on Shabbos. There are too many pitfalls of Shema Yavirenu, and once it wasn't allowed to be shaken on the first day of Sukkot, outside of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that we're worried that we're not b'kiyam b'kviyah d'yacha, even in Eretz Yisrael, where they were b'kiyam b'kviyah d'yacha. The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, says that we didn't want to create a difference of practice between what was done in Eretz Yisrael and what was done in Chutz La'aretz, since in Chutz La'aretz there wasn't a sufficient basis for saying, oh, shake the lulav anyway on the first day, we'll just make provisions. Everyone's going to take the lulav to show before him, because it wasn't worth it, since we're not dealing with the mitzvah deraisa necessarily. It may not actually really be the first day of Sukkot. So therefore, we apply the same principle in Eretz Yisrael. But here, we have a different concept that we're saying that, no, there actually was a discrepancy even during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, unlike the situation of lulav, where during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, really everywhere, both in the Beis HaMikdash and outside of the Beis HaMikdash, when the first day of Sukkot fell out on Shabbos and it was a mitzvah d'oraisa, even outside the Beis, within the Beis HaMikdash, it's a mitzvah for all 7 days. But even when it was a mitzvah outside the Beis HaMikdash on the first day, we did allow this special dispensation. We didn't worry about Gzeirah d'Rabba on the first day, but when it comes to Shofar, we are worried about Gzeirah d'Rabba, even with respect to the day in which it is clearly d'oraisa, because there's only one day of Rosh Hashanah, Mi'ikar Adin, so it's really Adin d'oraisa. But nonetheless, we say that outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you shouldn't shake the lulav. So the Rabbi says that you shouldn't blow the shofar. So the Rabbi says that even though we're treating it a little bit differently from lulav, nonetheless, we do have this concern, Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos Birshus Harabim, and therefore we're not going to allow you to blow the shofar on the first day, even during the time that the Beis HaMikdash was standing, presumably because of the fact that individual people couldn't be trusted. It's not like with the lulav, where they would make these arrangements where everybody's lulav would be brought to shul the day beforehand, and they would have all kinds of provisions to prevent the carrying. Here we say, no, only in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Babli says. The Babli says it's the concern, Shemi Avirena Dalet Amos Bershu Sarabim. Rashi says that the reason why they weren't goes there in the Beis HaMikdash is because the ain't Shavus B'Mikdash, because we have a principle that there were no Isuri D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash. So when they made this Takana, Shemi Avirena Dalet Amos Bershu Sarabim, that wouldn't be a takana that would be applicable during the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, it would only be applicable outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, the Turi Evin asks on the Gemara there, if that's really the case, as Rashi's explaining that it's based on Ein Shavus B'Mikdash, and the Ritva also gives that same explanation in Source Test, that it's based on this principle of Ein Shavus B'Mikdash. So he says that Ein Shavus B'Mikdash, we find, if you look in the Gemara Misachim and Daf Samachay, it has to do with the notion that we allow the Hadakah of the Azara when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos and you bring the Korban Pesach. We allow the rinsing of the floor in the Beis HaMikdash, and we're not worried that you're going to make gumos and you're going to be over on Bonet, because that has to do with an actual avoda, the actual bringing of a korban. But we don't find that we apply this principle of Ein Shavus B'Mikdash when there isn't a korban that's being brought, when it isn't something which is intrinsically an avoda's Beis HaMikdash. So some of the later Meforshim answer the kasha of the Turi Eben, and they say that the blowing of the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash was intrinsically a different kind of blowing of the shofar than that which was blown outside of the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, with Sweet Pesach Frank, in his Mikrai Kodesh, even makes a suggestion that maybe the blowing of the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash, because it was Ke'en Avoda, it was some type of an Avoda that was done in conjunction with the Kabbonos of the day, that it actually had to be blown only by Kohanim. Only Kohanim would be allowed to blow the shofar. He makes that suggestion. And others, such as Yerucham Olshan has in his Yerach L'Moadim, and there are essays about this as well by Rav Sternbach in his Moadim Usmanim, they make the suggestion that perhaps it was a different type of tekiah, and we find that it had to be done together with chatzotzos. When it's blown outside of the Beis HaMikdash, you don't have chatzotzos, you don't have trumpets, it's just the shofar that's being blown. We say, no, they actually have chatzotzos, and we also find this idea that it was you adorned the mitzvah by having piv mitzupa zav, that the mouth of the shofar, when it was blown in the Beis HaMikdash, was, according to Rashi, it was mitzupa zav. There's a Mishnah that talks about where you have a shofar that's been mitzupa zav. And Rashi says that was a special din in the Beis HaMikdash, so that it may have had a different status, that it really was an avoda, so that we can understand why it would be that we wouldn't apply the principle of shavus, that we would say that you should not violate Derabbanan, here, the Gezeira Derabba, even in the Beis HaMikdash, since it didn't relate to Avoda, because it really does on some level relate to Avoda. There is another suggestion as to what a potential difference may have been. It could be that when you were dealing with each individual's obligation outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that was an individual obligation. When we deal with the idea of blowing the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash, blowing the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash is more of a notion of a chovas hatzibor, that it is that the tzibor is supposed to see to it that there is a shofar blown in the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not the obligation on each and every individual per se that they have to go and listen to the shofar when it's blown in the Beis HaMikdash. It can be blown by those who are in the Beis HaMikdash without anybody else listening to it, and you have thus fulfilled the chovas hatzibor. This is akin to an explanation that's given by the Vilna Gaon, that's brought down in the Maaseh Rav, to answer a different kasha, because the Vilna Gaon, as we know, was very favorably inclined towards the notion of reading the Megillus in a shul during the different holidays. Chol HaMoed Sukkot, we read Koheles this year, it's going to be Shmini Atzeres, because there is no Shabbos Chol HaMoed, but normally it would be read on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you'd read Koheles, but we read it Shabbos that falls out on Shmini Atzeres. On a Shabbos, Chol HaMoed Pesach, we read Shir HaShirim, and on Shavuos, the second day of Shavuos, we read Megillas Rosa. So the Gra says that these are real obligations. If in fact you look in Megillas Sofrim, it seems like there is a Masechah Sofrim. Excuse me. It seems like these are real obligations to read these Megillas during these holidays, and therefore you make the bracha of Al Mikra Megillah, and you make the bracha according to the Vilna Gaon of Shechayana. When I used to read Megillahs from a clock when I was growing up in my shul in Muncie, and Rabbi Moshe David Tendler's shul in Muncie, so he followed the Vilna Gaon, and I would always make both brachas. I would make an Al Mikra Megillah, and I would also make a Shechayana. I come to Chicago, and I read the Megillahs, and they most of the time don't let me make a bracha altogether. It's very disappointing. You know, you go through the trouble to prepare to read from at least an Al Mikra Megillah, but, you know, Shechayana, nobody even, you know, heard from at all. When I would go to the YU Shavuos Yahweh Kala retreats, so I was able to negotiate with Rav Shechta to say an Al Mikra Megillah, but just not a Shechayanu. Fine, but the Vilna Gaon held that you make an Al Mikra Megillah and you also make a Shechayanu. So the question then is posed, if he holds that it's such an obligation that you have to read the Megillahs in these days, so why in the world Are we allowing you to read it on Shabbos? And didn't Rava say that there was a special gzeira with respect to not only Shofar, not only Lula, but even with respect to Megillah, that if Purim should ever fall out on Shabbos, which according to our calendar it can't, but if it would fall out on Shabbos, we wouldn't allow for the reading of the Megillah on Shabbos. At least one major reason that the Gemara gives based on gzeira to Rava is because we're worried, Shema Yavi Reno, Dalet Amos, B'Shus Rabbis. So why aren't we worried about doing the same with respect to Megillah's Koheles on Shabbos, Kol HaMoed Sukkos? Why aren't we worried about the same with respect to reading Megillah Shir HaShirim on Shabbos, Kol HaMoed Pesach? So the footnotes, the Ma'aseh Rav, so they quote, I have this actually in the materials, if you look at source at your class, somebody asked this kasha, Beheshiv, look at the second line, second to last word, Shegzeira Darabah Lo Shayach Ela B'Chiyubim HaMutalim HaKol Yachid B'Yachid. The Gezeira is only applicable if I have Chiyubim that are individual Chiyubim, Kamo Shofar B'Lula Megillah B'Zmana, Behind the diagram, HaKol Chayavim B'Shofar, HaKol Chayavim B'Lula. He began his statement by saying, everybody's obligated in these things, and maybe somebody who wants to know how to do it properly is going to be Yelech Eitzabaki to figure out how to do it correctly. But these Megillahs, it's not a Chobas HaYachid. You're sitting in your home and you're not davening in Shul for whatever reason. You don't have the obligation to read Koheles. You don't have the obligation to read Shir Hashirim. You don't have the obligation to read Rus. But Kriyas Megillah Salah Lohukbu Klal HaYachid Kim HaRabim. It's something which is only under the communal supervision of the Shul. Kimo Kriyas Sefer Torah Shim Ein Ka Minyan Asara. If you don't have a minyan in the synagogue and there is no tzibor to oversee and supervise it, so then there is no mitzvah. There's no obligation. And chiyuv klal al yachid v'darashim chiyuv muta akima al rabim. When the obligation is only incumbent upon the rabim, leka lamecha shema yavirenu. So then you don't have to worry about shema yavirenu daladam sushas rabim because it's under communal supervision. So that could be also an understanding of what's going on in the base of mikdash. Even if I don't come up with the explanation. Then it's some type of an avoda space hamikdash, and it's done in a different fashion. But I can say that even if it's done in exactly the same fashion, the nature of the chovah is different. The nature of the chovah is that it's a chovah harabim, and therefore I would not apply the principle of saying that this is I don't have to come to even the explanation of saying ein shvus beveis hamikdash. Maybe there is a shvus. Even Bebei Samikdash. Maybe it's not an Avodah Sakov. And the Turi Eben is 100% right that I wouldn't have the Petur of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, but there's no Shvus to speak of over here because Rabba's entire din would not be applicable when I'm dealing with a Chobas HaTzibur. Maybe the blowing of the Shofar in the Bebei Samikdash was a Chobas HaTzibur. So this is all within the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, has a totally different explanation, which is the Havamina of the Babli. What the Babli had at the Havamina that was rejected, the Yerushalmi accepts in its maskana, namely that, guess what? The reason why we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos when Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos outside of the Beis HaMikdash is not because of Gzeira Derabba. Yerushalmi never heard of Gzeira Derabba. Yerushalmi says it's because of the Gzeira Sakasu, because the Torah says, Zichron Teruah. Zichron Teruah means that it's there is a circumstance in which there is only a remembrance of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and that's when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Well, then, what about the kasha of the Bavli, that if that's the case, why do we allow it in the Beis HaMikdash? So the Tzid Yerushalmi actually anticipated the kasha of the Bavli. Yerushalmi asked that question, and Yerushalmi says, he quotes Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, it's the last line on the first page in Source Gimel. No, it says, Rikraftem, Makam Shakobonos Kraven, that you're always supposed to blow the shofar. It doesn't matter. Rosh Hashanah would fall out on Shabbos. It's Xeris Akasiv. Whenever you have the place, the Makam, where the Kobonos are being brought, so then you always blow the shofar. And that's why you blow the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. So where do we see that from the fact that it says Rikraftem? So here, the Meforshim of the Yerushalmi do mental somersaults a little bit, and they explain that if you look at the Pasuk in Parshas Pinchas, which is in Source Hay, where it says, Yom Teruah Yiyeh Lachem, so immediately afterwards it talks about when you blow the shofar, you're going to have activity of Kobanos, because it says immediately afterwards, in the very next Pasuk at the beginning, Vasisem Olah, that you're going to be bringing your Kobanos, that when there's a bringing of Kobanos, it's always a Yom Teruah. But when it says, Bikraftem Ishel Hashem, in the Pesukim in Parshas Emor, that does not come immediately after the mention of Zichron Shua Mikra Kodesh. Zichron Shua sounds like I'm not blowing the shofar per se. Well, if you're not blowing the shofar per se, V'hikraftem is very distant from that. There is a phrase that interrupts between the wording Zichron Shua Mikra Kodesh and V'hikraftem Yishev Hashem. First, the pasuk says Komalechas Abodalo Sasu, and then afterwards V'hikraftem Yishev Hashem, meaning that where it is V'hikraftem Yishev, that is not associated with Zichron Shua. In a place of Zichron Shua, when you're not blowing the shofar, that's not the place of V'hikraftem. Blowing of it, if it is a place, if there are kabanos going on, like V'hikraftem Yishev, Asisem Olah, so that immediately, if it's going to immediately follow anything, it's following Yom Shua, but it's not following Zichron Shua. And that's how the Kovana Eda explains the limit of the Yushami. And this is really what the Yushami is saying, that it's always going to be a Yom Shua, it's always going to be a place of blowing in the shofar when you have a korban that's being brought. What about, though, the other kasha of the Bavli? The other kasha of the Bavli was, why do I need Xeris HaKasuf? Why do I have Xeris HaKasuf that says, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, if it's Shabbos, Zichron Shua, don't blow the shofar. Why not? Why not blow the shofar on a Shabbos? It's not a malacha, right? That was the other kasha that the Bavli asked. So, Rav Soloveitchik had a very interesting suggestion. That's quoted by Rav Shechter in his Sefer Pikvei Hatzon, pages Reish Chof Vav to Reish Chof Zayin. His suggestion was that this is the Yushami L'Shitaso, that the Yushami holds, this is in Perek Tes Vav of Masechah Shabbos, that there's an Issa L'Bakish Tzrocha B'Shabbos, that there is a prohibition for a person to supplicate for his private needs on Shabbos, that that's considered to be a violation of Davin Dover. It's considered to be on some high level, if not a din d'oraisa, at least divrei kabbalah, it's up there in the higher echelons of what is prohibited on a Shabbos, and therefore that's why this pasuk Zichron Shua is coming along and it's telling me you're not allowed to blow the shofar, because the blowing of the shofar, that's a form of tefillah. It's what Rav Soloveitchik described as tefillah b'demos. It's a tefillah with our tears. Normally when we daven with words. We daven by articulating words. But in Rosh Hashanah, we're so sad and so desperate standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that we are incapable of expressing our words properly because we're overwhelmed, I should say. And therefore, the only way that we're able to supplicate a Kodesh Baruch Hu is through sounds, through the blowing of notes, through the shofar. It's considered to be a tefillah b'demos. We say, Yom Teruah Yelechem, Yom Yabava, that it's considered Yom Yabava. It's a day of tears. The shofar is a supplication to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's tears that we're pouring out to a Kodesh Baruch Hu through the sound of the shofar. Yes.
So just to, if I could be motive, so yesterday when Rav Shechter met, we had a group that went to New York.
Oh, wow.
So he explained this idea to us, and it sounded like what he was saying was that even though he said the Gemara presents, you know, that there are Shari Tefillah and Shari Demos. That Shari Tefillah is Ninalum, Yishchar Beis HaMikdash, but Shari Demos is Lo Ninalum. So what he was explaining yesterday, which I never understood before, is that Shari Demos doesn't mean physically, actually crying. It doesn't actually have to be tears. He said if your tefillah is at such a high level of intensity that it's the equivalent of tears, then he said that's Begeder Shari Demos.
Oh,
he said
nice.
The shofar was Yom Yabava, it's because it's Begeder Shari Demos Lo Ninalu, because it's so sincere, it's so intense.
That's beautiful. But it's also actual tears, right? Because that the way in which we describe or explain Yom Yabava is that the Trua, which is described as the Yabava, is either Yulule Yalia or Genuche Ganach, which are different ways of crying. Either they are, you know, long sighs when a person cries, or they're sort of staccatic, a stream of sobs when a person cries, which is the other, which is Yulele Yalil. These are different forms of tears, but yes, that doesn't mean that we actually have the tears streaming down our face as we're blowing the shofar, but it's that same idea, this idea of tefillah b'demos. It's very beautiful. So you probably heard from Rav Shechter. So Rav Shechter went on to say, maybe adding a little bit to the Rav, that it's Yushami l'shitasa, but it's also Bavli l'shitasa, because the Bavli, Maseches Brachos, Daf Chaf Aleph, says that if a person is in the middle of davening on Shabbos, And they kind of, their mind wanders a little bit, or they're on automatic, which sometimes unfortunately happens when people daven, and they start saying, Atachoneinu Adam Da. So we say, let them finish the bracha. So why finish the bracha? If it's an Isser, you shouldn't be allowed to finish the bracha. So the Gemara says, no Isser involved. Really, on Shabbos, there'll be nothing wrong from being Mebakesh at Tzoracha, from a person requesting their needs when they daven on Shabbos. It's just that if we had the person say all of the 18 or 19 brachos of Shemona Esrei, so then that would be Matriach that Sibur would take away from Kavod Shabbos, if there would be a tirka that people had to daven for so long. So it's because we don't want to be Matriach people to daven for so long, it would take away from Kavod Shabbos. That's the reason why normally we don't include all of our bakashas in the fields, but there's no actual Isser involved. So then we understand why the Bavli said, what's the Isser? Why would I need Zichron Trua? Why would Zichron Trua come along and tell me that it would be Usser to actually blow the shofar on Shabbos? So we understand the kasha according to the Bavli, because there would be nothing wrong with Tefillah B'Dema'os on Shabbos per se, but according to the Yerushalmi, there would be something wrong with it. Rabbi Yosef Engel has a really startling suggestion. If you look in Sor Zion, the Gilyonei Hashas, so Rabbi Yosef Engel, I duplicated it in part because it's hard to believe that he actually says this, but he does. He says that it's kind of like a siyag de'araisa, that what the Yerushalmi really means. When Yerushalmi says, one pasuk comes along and says, Yom Tshua Yelachem is talking about when Moshiach falls down out on any other day of the week, then I have the pasuk that says, Zichron Tshua, the Mikra Kodesh, which is when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So what's the reason the Yerushalmi would be indicating that according to the Torah, you shouldn't blow the shofar on Shabbos? Because this Torah is telling you, you should be worried about Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos B'Shusa Rabim. That just like sometimes we have a siyug, which is contained in the Torah itself, right? Then the Avista Rabbi Nassim gives the example of Lo Sikrabu L'Gal Lo Se'erva. The Torah tells you, you're not allowed to engage in all kinds of prohibited relationships, so therefore don't come even close to the Erva. Don't hug or kiss the Erva, the way that it's understood by a number of Rishonim, where that itself is considered to be a Din D'Oraisa, but it's a Din D'Oraisa in the form of a Siyog. It's a Gedda, don't do this, because you might come to do something which is even worse. So therefore, the Torah is telling us, Zichron Tshua, don't blow the shofar on Shabbos, because Shemi Yamirenu Dalet Amos L'Shusa Rabim. Listen, once we've already concluded that Rabbi himself didn't come up with this Gzeira, so somebody came up with it, so that's what the Yosef Engel says. It obviously existed before Rabba, because we know it existed during the times of the Beis Hamikdash. So he says, welcome, for Haisa Gzeira Gam Bimei Moshe Lachein Nemar B'Shana Rishona, and that's the reason, right when the Torah was given, the Torah said, hey, I know that you have this really good Gezerah, so therefore Zichron Teruah, this is a good idea, you should keep this up, but because of this Gezerah, make sure not to blow the shofar on Shabbos, because this Gezerah D'Rabba is such a wonderful idea. So we have a memorialization of the Gezerah D'Rabba in the Torah itself. Now, of course, this idea is a very radical and innovative idea by Rabbi Yosef Engel, and it's really rejected by most of the other authorities. The Baal HaTanya writes explicitly that the Gezeira D'Rabba was a much later Gezeira, came much later in time. You know, many of the Gezeiras that were instituted by Chazal were instituted during the Bayis Sheni period. That was a time of the flourishing, flowering of Torah Shebaal Peh, kinds of other considerations that we had to be Mechazek the Torah. So it is very difficult to say that, but we can understand where Rabbi Yosef Engel is coming from, because otherwise, why would there be an Isser that would be imposed by the Torah itself in terms of Zichron Teruah? But in any event, the Bavli does not hold by the Yerushalmi, and we therefore might have to interpret Zichron Teruah differently. The way that Rav Soloveitchik understood was that, according to the Bavli, if Zichron Teruah is not in fact teaching us that it is a Din D'Oraisa, that we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos, Zichron Teruah is teaching us something else more akin to a couple of puzzling Rashis, including the Rashi in Parshas Emor and Perikov Gimel Pasuk of Dalet, the Rashi in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof Tesam and Aleph, where Rashi indicates that the recitation of the Tfilos, of the Brachos, of Rosh Hashanah, Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofaros, is a part and parcel of the mitzvah de'oraisa of Tekiyah Shofar, that the Tekiyah Shofar has to, on a de'oraisa level, be accompanied by Tefilos. That's why in the Briska tradition, they were always extremely makpid that when the shofar is being blown during Chazara Sashas and you're listening, so the Malkiyas, the Kohanim, and shofars at that point in time, you should listen intently on every single word and be more careful than you might usually be in terms of not allowing your mind to wander and so forth. It's a real problem for people like myself and I believe Rabbi Brand, who are Kohanim, when it comes to the beginning of shofars and we kind of have to go outside to wash our hands and we're not hearing most of shofaros. So there are shuls, I think, the briskers, they would just pause. When the Kohanim would go out to wash their hands, they would pause and not continue the tefillah at that period point in time. Or they'd wait until the end of the bracha of shofaros and have the Kohanim only go out at that point in time and then pause before they would get up to Ritzeh, so the Kohanim would have enough time to wash their hands so that they don't miss anything in terms of these brachos. But, you know, this is the sacrifice that we have to make, that we miss part of this real essential chelik of the Din D'oraisa, according to Rashi. But the Rav says that that really is the way that the Babli would understand Zikron Truah and would explain Rashi. Rashi, of course, would be the speaker. He's explaining the Shitas according to the Talmud Babli. According to the Talmud Babli, I have to have some other application and explanation of the term Zikron Truah. So then how do we explain our own practice that in the Kiddush and in the Shemona Esrei, we do distinguish. We say Yom Teruah if it's another day of the week, and say Zichron Teruah if it's Shabbos. Clearly, that is going according to the Yerushalmi. So we do accept, at least in terms of our Nusach HaTfilah, we do accept the sentiment of the Yerushalmi. So we do have to understand on some level the significance on a D'oraisa level that there is some sense that the Zichron Teruah is teaching us that there's something different about the way in which we observe Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos than the way in which we would observe Rosh Hashanah the rest of the week, that there is a different emphasis perhaps on Shabbos, and we'll get to that in just a bit in terms of how we should understand that hashkafically of what how we accomplish sort of the same goal and the same result in our tefillos on Shabbos without blowing the shofar as we would accomplish the rest of the week when we do blow the shofar. But one other important continuation of the discussion is the continuation of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah goes on and says that that was the beginning of the story, but you should know, as a famous radio commentator used to say, the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made all kinds of takanas. And amongst the takanas that Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai made was he said, okay, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore, but what are we going to do now when we have Rosh Hashanah that falls down on Shabbos? Are we not going to have Tzkiyah Shofar at all? So amazingly, Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai said, no, he made a takana. He said, Mishakar Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin, Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, and we're talking about Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shekal Yos B'Shabbos. This is exactly our case. This is exactly our year. What was his takana? He made a takana shitoken b'chol makom shiyesh bo bezdin, wherever there's a bezdin. Now, if you go on at the continuation of the Mishnah, and this is discussed at great length in the Gemara as well, there really were three different opinions. There's the opinion of the Tanakhama, the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, and the opinion of the Chachamim who responded to Rabbi Elazar about exactly what were the contours of the Takana, and there's a big, big dispute about it. Tanakhama says that really, if there was any, if the Bezdin was in a place, even Beikroi, it wasn't there permanently, they would still blow the shofar. And then comes along Rabbi Elazar, says, no, only Biavne, because the Avne, the great Sanhedrin, sat for a longer, more permanent period of time. And then the other Chachamim said, no, it's whether it was Biavne or any place in which the Bezdin would sit. And the various Rishonim discuss whether they're arguing about, do you need a Sanhedrin of 71? Maybe that's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. Maybe the opinion of the Chachamim who responded is wherever you have a Bezdin of 23, that's going to be good enough. And maybe the Chachamim, the Tanakhama, is saying that, no, as long as you have a Bezdin of 3, it's good enough, as long as they are smuchin. But it happens that there's one opinion that interprets the Tanakhama in a way that would go even towards our times, when we no longer have, number one, a Sanhedrin. We don't have a Bezdin of 23 Dayanim who can administer capital cases, much to my chagrin. And We do not have a bezdin of a smuchin, even when we have three dayanim, which we do have nowadays. We operate and function based on the principle of shlichusayo de kamaiko. Dinan, we're considered to be the emissaries of the dayanim of yesteryear, but we don't actually have the genuine smicha that can be traced directly back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore we're more limited in terms of the cases that we're allowed to hear. It has to be milsa de shlicha v'yesh bal chisaron kis. It's a less of a jurisdictional mandate. So we would generally assume, like the Rambam seems to indicate, that if you don't have a smuchin, so then you're not going to be able to have the fulfillment of this takana of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai nowadays to be able to blow the shofar. But that is the way in which most of the Rishonim learn. That's the way that most of the Rishonim learn. However, if you take a look at the Ran, which I have as a source. The Ran is of the opinion that, hold on, does anybody see or is he making it?
Test.
I think I have, oh, look at that. I don't actually have it. Okay, good. So I have, before I added that source, I have a different printout. No, maybe it's over here. Hold on. I'll tell you in a second. No, I don't have it. Wow, imagine that. Okay, so the Ran says that if you look at the fact that this halacha, the takana of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, was brought by the Rif. The Rif only brought those parts of the Gemara, the Mishnah of Gemara, that are halacha lemaisir. So he says, "Nir me'arav apasi shehebi meimus halala ba'halachos." That he holds that the opinion of the Tanakhama, which we hold like when he says Beikrai, means that you don't actually require a Bezdin Samach at all. Just any good Bezdin of the three Dayanim who are certified Bizman Hazeh, it could be the Chicago Rabbinical Council. You just go to Howard Street on Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos, and you're good to go. And you listen as we blow the shofar, right? That the Chachamim who responded to Rabbi Elazar sounded like the same as the Shita as the Tanakhama. So the Gemara said, as we mentioned, Ikim Binayo Beidina Dekroy, that if it's a temporary Bezdin or it's a happenstance Bezdin, that's where the Tanakhama holds that that would be good enough. And the Rif clearly holds the Tanakhama Sarah Bechor Bezdin Shigimel Token, Dainu Beidina Dekroy, that any Bezdin made up of three, it doesn't have to be 23. And it doesn't have to be 71, and it doesn't have to be smuchin. It would be good enough, and for that reason, the Rif held that would be fine, even bizman ha-zeh. And in fact, that is, and he points out that this is against the Rambam, who says in Perek Beis and Hilchos Shofar, bizman is a shechar beis hamikdash kol makom sheish bo bezin kavua v'hu sheyes samach beretz Yisrael token bo b'shabbes. He says that you need a bezin kavua that is samach. And so we certainly do not have a bezin samach bizman hazeh. And he points out that this opinion of the Rif was actually implemented by the Rif, that the Rif himself blew the shofar on a Rosh Hashanah that fell out on a Shabbos. If you take a look at, this is about five lines before the end, v'alzeh haya somech, he's talking about the Rif. The Rif was somech lasos maisev b'davish, are you talking b'beis dino? In the bezdin of the Rif, they actually blew the shofar b'Rosh Hashanah shekalios b'Shabbos. And the Ritva points this out as well. If you look in source Yud, not going to read all of it, but if you read the very last line of the Ritva, Mashamu b'gemar shein token u'bezdin shkit shel chodesh asik rabbi elazar lo ke'ilchasa, the bezdin says you need the gemara that says you need a bezdin that could be mekadesh shel chodesh. Nah, that's going like the second opinion that you needed the bezdin in Yavne, but it's not halacha according to the Ritva. The Ritva concludes with these words, which are the words that everybody has followed pretty much until the present day, which is Bizeh Enonachon. That's not correct pshat. The Rif got outvoted. Below Matzina, we don't find anybody, Mishino Kimoso Vishimokom Yisrael, nobody blows the shofar when a Shabbos, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Shabbos. In fact, let's say you would do so. So some point to the Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Mem Aleph, I'm an Aleph that says that if a person, let's say when they were Misakin, that the lulav had to be brought to the Beis HaKnesses on the day before Shabbos, when the first day of Sukkot would fall out on Shabbos when the Beis HaMikdash was still standing, so they would shake the lulav on Shabbos, but everybody would bring their lulavin in the Beis HaMikdash, the Arabais, everybody would bring their lulavin to the Beis HaKnesses. If it was outside of the Beis HaMikdash, let's say a person forgot, and they took their lulav, but they didn't bring it to the Beis HaKnesses before Shabbos, and now they're carrying it in the street for Amos B'Rishus Rabim. So are they Chayev Achatas? So the Gemara says they're not Chayev Achatas, because they were Toev Dvar Mitzvah. They were involved with the Dvar Mitzvah, and we paskin, like I think Rabbi Yossi, that they're not going to be Chayev Achatas in that situation, and that would be the Halacha, not Chayev Achatas. So some say, so we see that it's considered to be a mitzvah. It's considered to be an actual fulfillment of the mitzvah, and therefore, if the person would make a mistake, and they would blow on the shofar on Shabbos, they would still fulfill the mitzvah. That's what Rabbi Akiva Eger says. Rabbi Akiva Eger is Drush Rechidosh Malachas Kles, that he paskins that you would still fulfill the mitzvah if you happened to do it on Shabbos, even though it was in violation. And others bring a proof from the Chilkas Yoav brings a proof from the Gemara in Sukkah, from the Tosos in Sukkah, on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, where it says in the Tosfos that according to Beis Shammai, who say that if your Shulchan is outside of your Sukkah, and you're eating inside, and you're sitting in the Sukkah, and you're leaning over whatever towards the Shulchan, but the Maaseh, the Shulchan is outside of the Sukkah, even if when I'm swallowing the food, I'm inside of the Sukkah. Nonetheless, you're not Yotze, the mitzvah of Sukkah, one iota. And Tosro says over there that that means that you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. Not only is this sort of something that's imposed upon you by the Chachamim, but we say even on a Daraisa level, this is the Lashon that was stated over there by the Chachmei Beis Shammai, Yimasisa Kein Lo Kiyamta Mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha. And Tosfos says, yeah. And in fact, the Chachamim have the ability to be Oker, the Kiyama Mitzvah, even on a Daraisa level, through their Gezeros. So therefore he says that he doesn't think you'll be Yotze at all. Comes along with Asha Weiss in a piece that I think he just published, and he says that it doesn't really matter, even according to Rabbi Akiva Eger. Do you think Rabbi Akiva Eger is telling you that you should do this? Do you think that you should make a bracha if the Chachamim tell you you're not allowed to do something and you're violating the Divrei Chachamim? Do you think a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants your bracha? Do you think that's Ratzon Hashem? Even according to Rabbi Akiva Eger, you're certainly going to be Patur, and it's considered to be a complete non-fulfillment of anything that he says. He doesn't think that you can really say, even if the mitzvah has not been uprooted by the Chachamim, as Rabbi Akiva Eger might learn, he says you still don't get any reward for it. You wouldn't get any star for it. So he says you got to take it very seriously. The Chachamim say you should not blow the shofar on Shabbos, so don't think, oh, I'm going to get a star if I happen to do it anyway. He was asked, this was during Corona, one of the questions that he was asked was somebody who was in the hospital, who was going to be there the first day. There was a possibility somebody could blow the shofar for him on the first day. And the second day, he knew it would be impossible based on the circumstances of the treatment he was going to be getting in the hospital. He certainly wouldn't hear the shofar the second day. Could they make an exception to allow the shofar to be blown on that day? And Rav Asher Weiss was adamantly against it. He said, you're not accomplishing anything. It's not, even according to the Shita of Rabbi Akiva Eger, he's not saying the Chatchila that you should do it. It's totally counter to the Ratzon Hashem. The Kovna Rav, supposedly in the ghetto, quoted by the Rabbi Ephraim Ashri in Ishayos and Shuvos Mimam Akim, during the time of the Holocaust, when there were some Jews who got together and that they were about to be killed and they weren't going to make it past the first day of Sukkot, and they only had a lulav at that point in time, and they shook the lulav on that day because they said, we're not going to have the chance to do it afterwards, so therefore we're going to be mevatel the takana or the gezeira deraba of that he's worried shemi avirenu dalet amos, because at least with the gezeira deraba, at least they'd have the ability to fulfill the mitzvah lulav all the other days. We're not going to have that opportunity, so they did it. And they told the Kovna Rav, who was pretty much on his deathbed at that point in time when this was happening, and he said, "Oh yeah, that was a good thing." So Rav Asher Weiss says that number one, he doesn't think the Kovna Rav meant that they necessarily really fulfilled the mitzvah or did the right thing, but they had done it already. So what's he going to say? And number two, he said that it could be that he meant they did the right thing, because for their morale, in order to just have the spiritual and psychological strength to survive, it was necessary for them to do it for pikuach nefesh reasons, but not because the mitzvah really gets fulfilled when you're going to do it on Shabbos, even under dire circumstances. A very interesting discussion. Yes?
I wonder if this is Rav Asher Weiss Lishitoso, because when our last son was bar mitzvah, so we had the grade school, so I'm going to Eretz Yisrael, so I took the three oldest boys to Rav Asher Weiss, and he told over to Rav Asher what he said at his bar mitzvah, which was the Me'iri about Kriyasa Zuhi Leila. Mm-hmm. So the previous day we had been at Rav Rimon, and Rav Rimon heard the point, and he said that there was a chayal who reached out to me, who was on some far-flung base somewhere for Purim, and he had no Megillah. So Rav Rimon was asked by this chayal, should he recite halal?
Halal, rely upon the Me'iri.
So he quoted some achronim, he said, no, you should say the halal. So when I didn't tell him what Rav Rimon said, but when Aryeh said over this whole thing to him, so he said, halacha l'maisa, he does not think that you should recite halal if you don't have a Megillah. Why? Because he said that by Chazal formulating the takana as such that you don't recite halal, for whatever reason, once that is the takana, so then there's no place to say halal. Even if it's true that the original Surah of the Takana, but once they made the Takana, in a certain sense, they were okarit. So it's mm-hmm. kind of the Shitasa.
Very much the Shitasa. Very much so. I agree. Yes, it very much is in the, along the same lines of exactly what he's saying. So this was pretty much it by everybody, but there was one exception to the rule, like in all these cases. It was a big chacham by the name of Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger. He was he had a connection to the Ksam Sofer, not that he learned in the Ksam Sofer. The Ksam Sofer died when he was 2 years old, but the Ksam Sofer was a sandak at his wrist, and he always felt this close connection, and he actually popularized the famous phrase that was coined by the Ksam Sofer based on a Mishnah, HaKadosh Asa Min HaTorah, that you're not allowed to introduce new innovations, like moving where the bima is in the Beis Knesset, or giving sermons in the vernacular, having the non-Jew play the organ, etc., etc. That the Ksam Sofer very much fulminated against the innovations that were being brought by the Reform at that time, which was certainly an appropriate reaction, because he was worried it would get much worse, and it did in fact get much, much worse. So this was a major mantra of his throughout his life. Like his godfather, the Ksam Sofer, said, you know, HaKadosh Asa Min HaTorah, but boy, was he an innovator himself, because he came to Yerushalayim, he was living in the old city, and he said, hey, Rosh Hashanah is falling out on Shabbos. It first happened in the 1880s when he was there. He was born, I think, in 1837. So sometime in the 1880s, Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, and I'm going to blow the shofar. We'll put together a little bit of a bezin. Relied upon a combination of the Rambam, because he held that when the Rambam said that the mitzvah or the exemption in the Beis HaMikdash of blowing the shofar on Shabbos applies to Yerushalayim, that really survived the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash as well. And even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was an exemption for the old city of Yerushalayim. You could say, no, it's only applicable, according to the Rambam, to the old city of Yerushalayim when the Beis HaMikdash is still around. And you have the continuation of that Kedushas Beis HaMikdash, Kedushas HaKobonos, whatever the explanation is of what the Beis HaMikdash was providing in terms of why it is that the Xeru wouldn't apply. And also, even according to the Rambam, the idea of when you had the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the idea was that the Beis Din would be careful to supervise the process. Shebeis Din Masimin Sa'am Modian Osan, and you would need a Beis Din Kavua at the very least for that. And there was no Beis Din Kavua that Akiva Yosef Schlesinger had. He just put together a makeshift Beis Din at that point in time for purposes of blowing the shofar. He also made the argument that, well, the Rif said that it's okay, even outside of Yerushalayim, and why are we keeping 2 days of Rosh Hashanah anyway in Eretz Yisrael? The one who really said, well, that's really the halacha that we have to keep for all time in Eretz Yisrael was the Rif. So you're going to follow the Rif about that. So follow the Rif that you can, you know, the Rif, see, following the Rif, but when it comes to tefillin, you're not going to wear tefillin on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So at least follow the Rif that you shouldn't be deprived of blowing the shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. And then he said, and we don't really have a Shisra Rabbim nowadays, and if we did have a Shisra Rabbim nowadays, Kamash Yerushalayim, Blasus Nulos Belayla, so he had, and he threw in the Gemara and Sukkah for good measure. Now the Gemara and Sukkah, you can see why it's not a good Raya, because the Gemara and Sukkah was talking about a time person mistakenly took out their lulav during a day in which it actually was permissible to shake the lulav on Shabbos. It was kodim, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, that really is a very difficult raya to bring. I had that kasha on the raya, and Rav Asher Weiss also had the same kasha on that raya I saw, where he said that you're mixing apples and oranges. That was during a time that it was permissible. The person was just supposed to have brought his lulav to the Beis Knesset on Erev Shabbos, and he got to do so. So all the rayas really were slugged up by the other rabbanim at the time. And one of the authorities who actually brings this whole mice and discusses it, they have a hard time finding a lot of Svarim. Although Rav Sternbach does mention it in his Modim Uzmanim, but Rav Zevin in his Modim Lahalacha, so he has a whole essay on this, and he tells you everything that happens, but he doesn't even bring all of the different riots, because he said they were so bad that it just sort of like is beneath the dignity of his sefer at some level to bring all of his different riots. But at the time, what was interesting was that some of the older rabbanim in Yerushalayim, who wouldn't have been comfortable doing this themselves, they said, look, if you do blow it, and we listen to it, we think that they were kind of thinking along the lines of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, they thought that they would actually be Yotzei if he would blow the shofar. And that's a questionable proposition, as we mentioned, but they didn't want to take any chances. The second time around that it happened, that's when he really stirred up more of a commotion about it, because they were publishing articles back and forth. There was a Torah journal, Tel Tapios, where there were articles back and forth about this a particular issue. Most rabbanim obviously came out against it. There were 2 years in a row. The Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, 1905 and 1906. And at that point in time, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim was Shmuel Salant. Shmuel Salant was figuring that, you know, he wants to maybe have the opportunity. If this the shofar is going to get blown, otherwise you lose your chance to be Mekayim the Mitzvah Shofar Deraisa if you only listen on the second day. And the Aderet, in particular, who lived in Yerushalayim at the time, really wanted to listen if Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger would go through with it. And the reason was the Aderet belt, he's not necessarily going to make it beyond these 2 years, so he may not have a chance again to be able to be Mekayim Tzkiyah Shofar on a Deraisa level. And therefore, he was going to stand behind the wall and listen. But in the end, it didn't end up happening. And Rav Sternbach, in his Modim Uzmanim, goes so far as to say that you should learn from the fact that it didn't happen, that it really is a bad thing if it would happen. He said there was a rub during our times. Now, of course, when he speaks about our times, you can turn back the clock, 90 years plus. So I'm not exactly sure where in that duration he's referring to our times. But he said there was a Rav in our times who did this in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, well, Hishlim Shnasim. He says, then just you should know he didn't make it. So through the year, so it's probably not something which is appreciated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's certainly the position which was taken by Rav Asher Weiss when he was presented with the Shaila in the Corona context, where he said that it would not be appreciated. But if it's not appreciated, so why? What then are we left with? The Gemara and Shabbos on Tev Zayin Amud Beis quotes Rabbi Yitzchak with the Kol Shara Shein Token of Tzkilasa Marin Labisofa. If you don't blow the shofar at the beginning of the year, then you're going to have tzaros. That's what the Gemara indicates. You have tzaros at the end of the year. So my time would blow your arbei b'satan, because you weren't able to do the irbuk satan. The satan hears the tkiyas of Yusha, and he hears the tkiyas of the Muma, and he says, oh no, it's all over, the Mashiach's coming, and he runs for his life, and he's not able to prosecute. But we don't have the ability to have the satan run for his life when we're not going to blow the shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, when it falls out on Shabbos. So Tosfos says something very interesting. Tosfos says, "Mefarish ba'alachas gedolos of course the Bahag, lav de mikla b'Shabbos l'lisyalin onsa." When the Gemara says that it's going to be, you're going to be in bad shape if you don't blow the shofar at the beginning of the year, that doesn't mean when the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Then it's perfectly understandable. It just means it was an onus that it was COVID, whatever, people didn't have access to a shofar, they were stuck at home. They didn't hear the shofar for that reason. It was not a Shabbos, it was a weekday, but they didn't hear the shofar, so then they're in trouble. So the Rashba actually does not even say that. The Rashba says, no, the Gemara means you didn't blow the shofar because it was the Pshia. It was out of negligence, not because it was an onus. Why should you be punished if it's an onus? So the Meshech Chochma explains, no, no, no. that is, you shouldn't think the shofar is like any other mitzvah. The shofar is like a trufa. It's like a refuah, that we're spiritually ill and we need the refuah, we need the healing powers and properties of the shofar in order to heal us spiritually of Rosh Hashanah. So if you have a sick person and somebody accidentally flushed their medicine down into the toilet, so we say, oh, Onis Rachmana Patri, he's going to get better anyway. No, he's not going to get better with that. It's refuah. So it's the same thing. Even as an onus, that's what Tosis is saying, you're not going to get better spiritually if you didn't blow the shofar at the beginning of the year. You're going to be in bad shape. So why then does he say that it's going to be okay? This is the source test above. Why is it going to be okay, ask the Meshech Chochmah, if you didn't blow the shofar at the beginning of the year when it fell out on Shabbos? So he says, because you have to understand, you're not blowing the shofar when, what does the shofar represent? The shofar represents the Elo Shel Yitzchak. It represents an evocation of HaKadosh Yitzchak, how Yitzchak is prepared to sacrifice himself for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he says there, therefore, when we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos, it's really a very similar sort of a notion that we're saying that we're giving up the protection of the shofar because they have a great love and affection for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we're oktim kulam of our kiddush shmo yisbarach, that we are basically giving up our kapara in order to see to it that lo yivula l'shabbos amein al kedusha shmo yisbarach, that we should protect the sanctity of the Shabbos, which is the great testimony of the sanctity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, the keeping of the Shabbos. So we go so far in order to ensure we care so much about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we care so much about His honor, we care so much about the sanctity of Shabbos, which is a display of His honor, that we go out of our way to even forfeit our kapara in order to show proper tribute to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that is our own personal akedah. Therefore, that is the same type of an action as blowing the shofar itself, as evoking akedah yitzchak, because we were just evoking akedah yitzchak in this particular fashion. There's a different version, a signon of this, that you find in the Kashuk Lava Gaon. Yeret Tzvi, Rabbi Simon brings this in his show, in the Sefer on Rosh Hashanah, in Simen Chav. The Kashuk Lava Gaon says that what was Yitzchak's great accomplishment when you think about Akedas Yitzchak? Well, Avraham heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that even though we would think that child sacrifice is something completely antithetical to Torah, Judaism, everything that we believe in, but he heard it straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so he had no choice but to do it. But Yitzchak didn't hear it straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He had to rely upon his father. So that was Emunas Chachamim. It was a display of Emunas Chachamim. So when we don't blow the shofar, when Rosh Hashanah blows down on Shabbos, so we're showing a tremendous display of respect for Rabbah and for the Chachamim who established this takana, which we may not even understand. Hey, wait a second. We find so many times in the Mishnah Berurah and Hilchos Shabbos, which you're going to be seeing over and over again, many people hold we don't have a Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa anyway, and there's certainly ways of protecting. I would say the Rif said that it was okay, and maybe we can convene a Besdin, even Bizman Hazeh, and we can have all kinds of arguments. It doesn't make so much sense to us, but we say, you know what? We have Emunas Chachamim. This is what was established by Chazal, that we don't blow the shofar because Shem Yavireda Da'aram Sushisaram, whether we understand it or not. And based on Emunas Chachamim, we're going to give up what we consider to be just a cornerstone of Judaism that we should connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So that also is a manifestation of the same idea of the Akedah Yitzchak. However, just one footnote to all of this, which maybe you've heard because it's been making the rounds a lot this year, not so much in previous years when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbos, but this year is really making the rounds a lot, is the commentary of Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger al Torah, which is called the Minchas Ani. So Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, in his commentary Minchas Ani on Parshas Ha'azino, so he says that it's not an automatic amnesty that you get this year, that because Rosh Shabbos is the first day of Rosh Hashanah, so the fact that we don't blow the shofar, we get that we're going to be in good shape anyway. So he says that that is what the Tosfos says, but it's based upon the fact that we are honoring the Shabbos. It's based on the fact that we're keeping Shabbos properly. And he gives the following mashal. He says that if you have a person who's in a particular kingdom who does something to anger the king. He doesn't follow the king's ordinances properly, and he's sentenced to death. And he pleads with all the ministers and the officers, please spare me, spare me, spare me, and nobody's sparing him. And finally goes to his wife and says, what can you do? What's left for me to possibly do to petition the king? And the wife says, you know what? I'm in good graces with the king. I'm in good graces. I'm going to go, and I'm going to speak to the officers and the ministers. If necessary, I'm going to speak to the king, and I'm going to get you up. And sure enough, she shows up in the courtroom before they're going to actually bring him out to the gallows and kill him. And they look at the wife and say, you know what? We really like the wife. And the wife feels so strongly about her husband and how we should grant him clemency. So because of the fact that we really respect the wife, so therefore we're going to let him get off the hook. And then about 6 months later, some other officer in the kingdom gets into the same pot of hot water as this previous person. And he's also sentenced to death. But he knows that the previous fellow got off the hook by employing his wife, by bringing his wife into the picture, because his wife was in good graces. He says, no, my wife is also in good graces. He brings his wife in, and he said, his wife says, oh, please, save my husband, and so forth. And they say, okay, very nice, you brought in your wife, and off with his head. He said, wait a second, why off with his head? The other guy brought in his wife, and it was perfectly fine. So he said, yeah, but look at your wife. They looked at this wife. She came in, she's standing next to her husband in the courtroom. She has all kinds of bruises and scratches on her face. So where are those bruises and scratches from? Said, oh, I don't know, she fell or something. He said, no, we know where it's from. It's because you're not treating her properly. You're not treating her properly, so why should we let you off the hook because of the fact we like her? We like her so much, that's another reason we should kill you. Because of the fact you're not treating your wife properly. She says, that's basically the relationship between Knesset Yisrael and the Shabbos. The Medrash Rabbah says that Sunday has Monday, and Tuesday has Wednesday, and Thursday has Friday, and Shabbos came in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and said, who's going to be my mate? Who's going to be my partner? And the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, you know who's going to be your partner? Knesset Yisrael is going to be your partner. So we are considered to be joined at the hip. We're considered to be married on some level to the Shabbos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has so much of an affection for the Shabbos. So even if, for whatever reason, we're not able to get in his good graces, we're not able to blow the shofar, but at least if we show a tremendous amount of affection and respect for Shabbos, the Shabbos says, look how well my husband is treating me. Look how well he's treating me. He's so worried about my honor, that he's worried about Shema Yavirenu, and he treats me so well the rest of the year, and so forth. So then the king will look at the Shabbos and say, oh, so because you're treating the Shabbos so well, and because I have such a respect and love for the Shabbos, so therefore I'm going to let you off the hook. But if we don't treat the Shabbos properly, so then we don't have that protection. So that's the point, that's the argument, which is made by Rav Yaakov Ellinger in the Maaseh, in his Sefer Minchas Ani. And that, I think, is a very important message for us to take with us as we approach Rosh Hashanah this year, that falls out on Shabbos, really on two levels. I'll go beyond that where the Minchas Ani went. The Minchas Ani is basically saying that, especially this year, and this is so appropriate for the limud of the Kollel this year, we should reinforce our dedication to Hilchos Shabbos, to understanding Shabbos, to keeping Shabbos properly. This has to be a year in which we really show that we're worthy of that so that we can get all the benefits of what we would have received had we blown the shofar, that it's considered at some level that it's as if we are blowing the shofar, getting the same type of a kapara from a Kodesh Baruch Hu because of the fact that even if we can't provide the shofar blast to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we can provide at least the fact that we respect us so much the Shabbos, that's our partner, so Kodesh Baruch Hu should spare us and give us a good judgment based on the respect that we give to Shabbos. But, whenever you have a mashal, and you have the nimshal, so you have to realize that the nimshal is also teaching you something about the mashal, that it's also perhaps a message for all of us about the importance that when a Kodesh Baruch Hu looks at us, he's looking not only at our own internal deeds, but he's looking about our relationships. How are we treating those that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has provided to us in our lives to be our support system, to be our spouses, to be our parents, to be our tamidim, to be our chavrusas? How are we treating those individuals that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has given to us as our mates, has given to us as our partners, has given to us as our complement? To what degree are we showing our appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by treating those individuals properly? So that's also a special message, particularly this year, with Rosh Hashanah falling out on Shabbos, and the message of not blowing the shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Shabbos this year, that perhaps we should work harder on sustaining and adhering properly to those relationships and treating, you know, the people in our lives, our close ones, properly and with great respect, which also demonstrates an appreciation towards the Kaddish Baruch Hu. There are some other inyanim that I include in the materials that you can read for yourself in terms of what are the other ramifications when Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos. Not too many, just we don't say Tashlich. And that might also, by the way, relate a little bit to this idea that we mentioned, the Yerushalmi, of not having Bakashas Tzrachov on Shabbos, because the way in which the Tashlich ceremony has developed over the years, originally just a pasuk from Micha, but now it's developed into like a long 25-minute recitation, but it also includes Yud Gimel Midos, and Yud Gimel Midos also is a form of something which in most Sidurim we don't say the Yud Gimel Midos, and we take out the Torah on Rosh Hashanah, because there are certain things that we don't do when it falls in on Shabbos, certain things that we don't do on Shabbos, so that also, you know, could be a part of the consideration as well with respect to the Tashlich. And there's a question with respect to Tzidkas Chatzedek, because Tzidkas Chatzedek is not said on Shabbos, generally speaking, when it's the type of day that you wouldn't say Tachnun, it would be a very happy day. So here you have a machlokas between the Machabe and the Ramah. The Machabe says that, yeah, but Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin, so on this particular year, when Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, you should say Tzidkas Chatzedek, and the Ramah says, no. We don't say Tzidkas Chatzedek because, after all, it's a Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh, don't forget, Rosh Hashanah might be a Yom Dim, it's also Rosh Chodesh. This comes to the whole discussion, do we say there are two separate Kedushos of Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Hashanah? When Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, sort of a separate discussion, or independent of Shabbos, but, you know, do we say in general in Rosh Hashanah there's two separate Kedushos? But it's a very interesting Aruch HaShulchan, and I put it in the materials, and it's just worth looking at, when the Aruch HaShulchan explains why it is that we don't say Tzidkas Chatzedek, and we follow the Ramah. So he says it's not so much necessarily that you have to make a tola in the fact that Rosh Hashanah is also Rosh Chodesh, where we generally would not say Tzidkas Chatzedek, but he says that even from the perspective that this is a Yom HaDin, but we're supposed to have a positive attitude towards it being a Yom HaDin, that we expect a favorable judgment, like the Torah says, that we dress up in our nicest clothing and we get washed and showered and are in a good mood when we can take haircuts when we approach Rosh Hashanah, not like a prisoner of an earthly king who would like go be rolled out in front of the court when he's about to be sentenced in his prison clothing and all disheveled and unshaven and so forth. So he says, Imishum Yom HaDin, he says that already everything has been, you know, sweetened up after Tfilas Musaf, that we've done everything properly. So here we haven't been able to do things fully in terms of the blowing of the shofar, but nonetheless, the Aruch HaShulchan says that if we daven properly and we have the right perspective, even this year, that we're not able to blow the shofar, so we can still be in the frame of mind that it's essentially a happy day and not a day in which we have to worry so much about judgment and say Tzidik HaDin, and we can dispense from saying Tzidkas on the Mincha of Shabbos for the first day of Rosh Hashanah, even under these circumstances. So we should all go in to Rosh Hashanah with the proper mindset of the importance of the Zichron Trua, of increasing the fervor of our tefillos, and with the proper respect for Shabbos that is demonstrated by our not blowing the shofar, and with a sense that if we do everything the way that we're supposed to do things, in terms of how we treat Shabbos, in terms of how we treat each other, in terms of how we daven in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in terms of having emunas lachamim, that we should be confident that we should all receive a favorable judgment, and we should have a favorable verdict for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, and for all of Klal Yisrael.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you.
So I'll be in touch with also Renee about the next time.
Yes, and yes, Hashem.